One of my favorite stories in all of the Old Testament in particular that talks about heroes has to be the story in 1 Samuel 17, David and Goliath. You've heard, I'm sure, some sort of permutation of that story over the years. But the deal is that Israel was beginning to regret their wanting of a king. They were underneath their first king, Saul. And Saul was leading his army out to fight a perpetual enemy, the Philistines. Well, this group of Philistines, it turns out that they had a particular guy that they thought was their hero. Yeah. It was a gentleman by the name of Goliath. He evidently was a bit over 7 foot tall. He was a huge, huge guy. And they would line up and they would promote him out at the beginning of their battle line. And honestly, he was so big, he was so intimidating, he was so scary that folks would turn around and go the other way. Just as soon as they saw Goliath, he was a show of force. He was shock and awe for that group. Well, you may recall that David came from a big family. In fact, he came from a family, I know he had some sisters, but unfortunately, we don't know their names. But we do know the names of some of their brothers, and he was the youngest of the boys, and certainly the smallest. In fact, we have a lot of evidence that I don't know if this applies to any of you all in your family, but he took some serious hazing from his brothers and sisters. He was called the runt. He was disregarded. And so when Saul's army went on a recruiting campaign and they brought people in by conscription, I'm sure, by the draft, they brought them out to fight the Philistines. Poor David, who was about 14 or 15 at the time, got left home to tend the sheep. That was his job. They decided that was about the only thing he was fit for. Well, it turns out that while he was there, that David was giving his heart to God. David was growing in his faith, and he was also growing in his physical ability. In fact, there was one great story where a lion comes up to attack the sheep that he's supposed to be guarding, and he doesn't have a lot of weaponry. This is a long way before firearms and all of those kinds of things, and he literally kills the lion with his bare hands. This is not an insignificant little kid, although my suspicion is while Goliath was 7 foot plus, he was about 5 foot nothing. David is given the job from his dad, Jesse. David's given the job from his dad, Jesse, to take some bread and some cheese. Ironically, the bread was going to the older brothers. The cheese was going to his older brother's supervisor, the head of that guard. But he gives them the orders to go and just take this to the people that are doing the real work. The people that are on the front lines fighting the Philistines. So David, being obedient as he is, he takes off and he goes and he finds his brothers. He comes up on the battle line and something odd happens. He overhears that giant, that hero to the Philistines, Goliath, mouthing off. And he's out there saying, what? There won't be anybody come out and get, look here, I'm here. I'm here again today. Here I am again. Come and get me. What, are you weak? Better yet, are your gods weak? He would have assumed the same polytheistic, multi-god worshiping thing that the Philistines would have had. Your God must be weak. Why won't you come out and fight me? And David 14, 15-year-old boy that he was, he said, "This is horrible. This is horrible. Don't you know there's some things worth fighting for? There are some things worth fighting for." And he said, "Wait a second, this can't go on any longer." In fact, he basically says, if none of you all are bold enough, if none of you all have the fortitude in yourself to go and fight him, I will. Well, his brothers, you can imagine how they reacted. What do you mean? You're supposed to be back here being a daddy's boy. What's wrong with you? You can't do this. In fact, The conversation that they're having in the battle lines gets so bold that somebody says, "Okay, let him try. We'll watch him getting cut down just like everybody else." Saul even gets in on the action, the king, and he says, "Okay, we'll take some of my armor." And so he gives him some mail, some chain mail, and a helmet, and a sword, and armor, all of which is too big for a 14-year-old boy. And David finally says, "You know what, I can't do this." He said, "Don't get me wrong, I will fight Goliath, but I can't do that with these weapons. That's not who I am." That's an important part, by the way. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But that's an important part of understanding what makes a hero. He was able to say, "That's not who I am." And he decides to fight Goliath in a different way. In fact, he goes out and he comes out there. Goliath is doing his usual trash talking and everything else, and he's doing all this stuff. And David says to him something that is an awesome thing. In fact, I want to read this to you if I can. It's in 1 Samuel 17, I've already told you the chapter, but if you can look down to the 47th verse. In fact, I'm going to read you a little bit more bloodthirsty verse 46, prior to 47. Reminds me a little bit of the scene from Braveheart where the guy says, "I am not a liar, but I am a savage." I think that's kind of what he's saying here in verse 46. Listen to what he says. "This day the Lord will deliver you." This is David talking to Goliath, 5 foot nothing to 7 foot plus. Okay? "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, and that all the earth may know there is a God in Israel." Now pay attention for verse 47. "And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear." Do you hear what he was saying? He's saying, in other words, the tools that you think are important are not. The tools the world recognizes as effective are irrelevant here. That is a powerful statement. Listen to the rest of this. "For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." Well, David proceeds to use the stuff that is authentic to him. He chooses to be real instead of someone he's not. And he reaches back into a bag full of rocks, of stones, and he grabs a slingshot, which was not the modern slingshot that you and I might go down and buy somewhere, you know, with you put it around your wrist and you can sight in and all that stuff like I had with a kid. This was basically a piece of leather that you could put that stone in, and it was attached to a cord, and you could whirl it enough, and obviously centrifugal force would begin to build so that at the end of that stone, it was going at a pretty pretty high rate of speed, and then he would loose one of the cords, and the stone would sling off at a tangent at whatever he was looking at. Now, quite frankly, that's an exercise that he had done often. He had done that often while fending off predators from attacking his sheep. And so, from his perspective, Goliath looked like just another predator. He decided that he would attack Goliath in the way that he knew. So sure enough, he selected a stone and he began to twirl that until it got more and more energy, and finally it released and it struck true right in the midst of Goliath's skull. Sure enough, he fell stunned. In fact, the text even says that it actually went into his skull. It cracked his skull. And he falls. And again, remember, David has no spear himself or no sword himself. He literally runs up, takes Goliath's sword. Takes Goliath's sword and does what he told him he would do. He and his head were soon parted. It's a rout after that, because the Philistines had seen their hero go down in flames. We've never seen that before in the world, have we?
Right.
It turns out that they became disillusioned, and so they turned and they ran. And sure enough, the Israelites pursued them, and they had a victory. And finally, there was someone even in Saul's court that says, who is this David kid? We need to get to know him. And so they figured out that, you know, David was this little kid, son of Jesse. And obviously, we all know the rest of the story. He would later become Saul's successor.
Yeah.
Why is he a hero? What makes this kid a real hero that you and I might emulate? And again, I ask that question knowing full well, knowing that through every medium channel, whether it be television, whether it be the internet, whatever it is, pushing us at someone to emulate. Whether you want to be Kim Kardashian, Beyonce, or whoever. What makes him a hero? I want to give you, if I may, three hero principles that I want to encourage you, particularly if God is still forming your personal identity, okay? And folks, that may be you sitting in the back, that 15, 16, God's just starting to wake up your heart to you're in your 60s and you got grandkids that you're worried about. Whoever it is, listen to me. These are three hero principles that you need to apply when you're thinking about who are folks that I look up to. Okay, here they are. Number one, real heroes aren't necessarily the biggest. Real heroes aren't necessarily the biggest. I've already told you about David's stature. I've already told you about Goliath's stature. It looked like it was a no contest kind of deal. It looked like it was impossible from every secular measurement standard. There's no way that David could possibly prevail in this situation. Sadly, the Philistines are like the world. And when I use the world, I mean not the church, okay? And don't get me wrong, I mean not the true church. The true church is the people of God that have given their lives to God, and God has claimed them and redeemed them. That's the true church. You may be sitting here this morning and you're just a visitor. I don't know. But I do know this. I do know this. The Philistines had chosen their hero in the traditional way. they had chosen him because of his stats. They had chosen him because of his stats. Oh, he's big. He's tough. He's killed more people than anyone else. They chose him exactly like a sports hero, didn't they? That's exactly what they did. They chose him because of his statistics, because of how many tackles he had made, because of how many three-pointers in a game, or whatever it is. They had chosen him according to those, and they said, that's my hero. They had literally taken someone and said, you know what? I don't care about the morality of his life. I don't care about what he does off the court. I don't care about what he does any other thing. I will choose him both because of those secular statistics. And as we just found out, they matter not a whit. In truth, they had selected their hero by the basis of what they could see on the outside. And what they did, what he did, that simply was surface on the world. Secondly, I've noticed this before. Real heroes seldom have the most stuff. Real heroes seldom have the most stuff. I mean, let me be clear. Goliath had it all. I mean, you know, if we could put Goliath in 21st century America, he had a bank account, he had a car that turned heads, he had a house, he had all kinds of stuff that impressed everyone. I mean, look at him. I mean, you know, he came up. They said that the head of his spear weighed more than the helmets. I mean, he was decked out. He was a warrior with a mission. I mean, he was the guy that people would look at and say, wow, that is impressive. And folks, if you don't believe that kind of same hero making goes on today, just watch a few Super Bowl commercials. Right? Just spend a little bit of time watching the TV or watching something else. I mean, you know, there's even a political candidate that I'm not even going to mention. And you can't even bait me into mentioning it. I know you. In which, you know, he thinks it's great because his particular house has gold inlay all over the stuff. I got to tell you, I couldn't see anything more irrelevant than that. In truth, we begin, or they begin, to name their heroes because of all the stuff. Those of us who have lived just a while, we begin to understand that, wait a second, the culture that says that more is better, we live long enough and we start to figure out, you know, more is just more. I remember when I was a kid, I always chuckle when I tell this because I was born in the late 60s. I grew up in the 70s, and my wife would always whack me on the back of the head and say, you know, you didn't grow up in any decade. It'll take some of you a while to get that. But I remember a t-shirt that was popular back then. It said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." And we all figured this out, that he who dies with the most toys is still dead. In truth, stuff is stuff. And what looks like bling, or what looks like something that somebody would chase after, or what impresses some other people, is stuff that will burn up with him. They chose Goliath not only because he was the biggest, and not only because he was the toughest guy on the block, but they chose him because of what it looked like he had achieved. He had just more stuff than everybody else. Let me just give a warning here, just a second. You've probably already figured this. The church that chooses their heroes like this is not the church. If you choose pastors, or if you choose the celebrity preachers that we've seen them come and go all our lives, haven't we? If you choose those celebrities because they're the biggest, they have the biggest congregations, or because they have the most stuff, I can tell you they are not your heroes. And that is not the church. Number three. The third hero principle that I want to suggest to you. Real heroes fight for the right side. Real heroes fight for the right side. You see, it wasn't enough. Goliath was big. It wasn't enough that he was tough. It wasn't enough that heretofore he had slayed all comers. It wasn't enough that he played the game, at a 10-foot level. It wasn't enough for all of that. At the end of the day, he still played for the wrong side. Listen again to what David said. He would say that, I don't care how you got here. I don't care what happened between the beginning of the buzzer to start the first half. I don't care about anything else. I just want you to know that because my God is God, at the end of the day, we win. Folks, I got to tell you, a real hero is willing to stand in the midst of uncertainty. My guess is when David went out there just a little bit, it was a little bit shaky. My guess is when he went out there, he was shaking in his boots just a little bit. Oh yeah, he understood who his God was, and he understood all of those things. And the only thing that kept him from running away like his compatriots did was that he knew he was on the right side. Church, we need to hear this. That when the culture goes nuts around us, when they're violent, when they have all kinds of other issues, we can't even begin to name them all. We know we're on the right side. I want to share with you a quote that I think is really sums up this part of the hero principles. Let me share this with you. This is something that the statement that I've thought about over a number of years. And I think it really, really begins to crystallize this. There comes a point. In fact, I've since altered this quote just a little bit. There comes a pivot point. Do you know what a pivot point is? A pivot point is when I was a kid, and you can imagine with my size, you know, I wasn't interested in football, but I sure did love basketball. And one of the first things, of course, you learn about basketball is how to pivot. And it turns out that when you're playing basketball, you have to pivot in a certain way so that one foot stays on the ground. And so when you're pivoting, you're changing direction, but you're changing direction while somehow rooted to where you've been. That's a pivot point. Well, it turns out that in my experience, and I think the experience of the Bible, is that there comes a pivot point in the making of a hero in which they have to answer this question. Do you follow the crowd, or do you do the thing that requires courage? At the end of the day, that's the only difference of a hero that I can tell. That's it. Because quite frankly, the crowd on the Philistines followed Goliath. The crowd on the Israelite side followed the cowards. Only David stood up and said, I'll be courageous. That's why he's a hero. I will pivot here. I will change here, and I will do something different. Let me suggest something to you. Young people especially, if you're in a situation in school or you're in a situation wherever you're at, I promise you, you'll be confronted oftentimes multiple times per week. Will you follow what looks like it's popular? What looks like other people are pressing you to, and my goodness, in a day in social media, it is worse now than I've ever seen it before. Yes. Or will you do the thing that is courageous and right? I will share with you just a very brief anecdote of a child of mine. I won't tell you which one because I don't want to embarrass this child. But this child went to college about 2.5 years ago. Obviously, many of you who know me know that all three of our children are adopted, and they're all now serving in active duty branches of the military, Army, Navy, and Air Force. This child went to college, and she went there having had the benefit of a pretty active, proactive Christian family all her life since we adopted her at a pretty young age. And she got to college, and it turns out that instead of doing the things that she knew were right, like focusing on studies, like literally, you know, following the Lord with all the precepts that she had been taught over the years, she chose to follow some friends that were horribly bad influences in her life. And because of that, I mean, sadly, you know, fortunately, she did not get hurt physically, but she washed out of college, and again, the Lord threw her a safety line, and now she's in a wonderful place, and she's returned to school, and she's doing well within the Army. But I will tell you this. I will tell you this, and I think that she would tell you this as well. It was all because in her mind she had not chosen to say, I will find the point at which I have to be courageous. And instead, she followed along with everyone else. Folks, we live in an age in which this smartphone is a dumb phone. It really is. Because if you're tied into so much of the messaging coming through social media, they are begging you to say, oh, well, I will determine my self-identity by how many likes I get. Instead of what God says you are. Amen. Folks, that is a dangerous thing. That is a dangerous thing. There comes a point in every, a pivot point in every, in the making of every hero in which they ask themselves, will I follow the crowd? Or will I do the thing that requires courage? So those are the hero principles. There they are. Number one, don't go for bigger. Don't go for the tough. Don't go for the thing that stands out by the world's objectives. Secondly, the second hero principle is that real heroes seldom have the most stuff. Real heroes seldom have the most stuff. And real heroes always play for the right side. Let me just share with you some of my heroes, okay? Let me just be confessional with you just a moment, okay? So I'm a guy who's more than half my life by the way that we guess that our lifespan is gone, and I've done career-wise, I'm in the track where God is using me, and I'm not interested in polishing a resume or any of those kind of things. So from someone who has at that place where I am kind of in a place where I can simply follow the Lord, right, let me just share with you some of my heroes, can I?
Yeah.
Here they are. Albert Schweitzer. That's probably not a name you know. I don't know. He was a musician. He was a teacher. He was a preacher. and he was a physician. That's quite a resume. So think about that. He had a medical degree, he was a preacher, and he was a teacher as well as he was a musician. Obviously, he had all the potential in the world to earn all the money he wanted to and be as comfortable as he wanted to be. Let me share with you what he did. He actually moved to Africa, left a whole lot of comfort and a whole lot of money. He moved to Africa and to a very remote area of Gabon, Africa. We're talking about, we're not talking about a thriving city like a Nairobi or something like this. We're talking about the sticks of Africa. And he started a remote hospital there. Listen to what he said, and I love this quote. He says, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I do know, the only ones among you who will really be happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." He's my hero. I love the stories. I love the reminder of people who have decided that they would serve others rather than themselves. Secondly, Martin Luther King Jr. I'll tell you why MLK has been a hero of mine for as long as I can remember. He reminded African Americans in general that God created them for dignity. Wow. That's powerful in itself. But I love this part. And he reminded racist white folk in general that if they oppressed another, they were still in chains themselves. That's a pretty cool message when you can do both of those. And that is, I think, exactly what he did. And he did it through the language, the only language that breaks down racism, that breaks down prejudice. He did it through the language of the church. Did you notice that? I mean, every time that he spoke, he was spot on. He said, "I do this because my faith demands it." Was it popular? Not exactly. Was it tough? You bet it was. He died in debt and he was murdered. He was a hero. Here's a name that you probably won't come across every day. I hope you're jotting these names down, and I encourage you to look them up a little bit more. Cassie Bernal. Cassie Bernal. You get the high score on Jeopardy if you know who she was. She was a little girl in Columbine High School when Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold shot several students there in Columbine in Denver, the outskirts of Denver, a few years ago. One of the students came up to Cassie and they said, "Do you believe in God?" And she said, "Yes." And they shot her. She's a hero. She did the thing that required courage, not the thing that everybody else was doing. They were running. They were out of there. She decided to stand and say, "I will not deny my God because of what he's done for me. I'll have courage." Some of these names you don't know. For instance, the next one is DeMarcus Dobbs. DeMarcus Dobbs, you would never know probably in 100 years unless you're a football geek. And so if you're a football geek, put your hand down. You might know him. DeMarcus Dobbs is a little kid from outside of Atlanta. I was fortunate enough to get to know DeMarcus when I was serving at Bethesda in Savannah. He grew up bounced around in the foster care system. Finally, when he was discovered, he was lying on a mattress that had been soiled by multiple people. He lay in filth. And finally, someone said, there's a place in Savannah where you can go. And so he came into the Bethesda Home for Boys. It turns out that DeMarcus ended up being a football prodigy. No one knew this. You've probably seen the movie The Blind Side, right, with Michael Vick, who played for the Baltimore Ravens for quite some time. It turns out that this is a story literally about him. Same situation. DeMarcus, great story. It turns out that he went to a local school there in Savannah. Sure enough, they won the state. He got to play for the University of Georgia. Sorry if you're wearing Alabama colors in the back. He got to play for University of Georgia, and sure enough, they had standout year after standout year because of DeMarcus's performance. He got picked up after he graduated from UGA. He got picked up by the San Francisco 49ers and had just a couple of really, really good years. I interviewed DeMarcus on videotape, and listen to what he said, okay? But because I want you to hear where he was. We're not talking about middle class kid. He was poor. He was about as poor as it gets. As you know, when we mouth the words, "Give us this day our daily bread," we go down and queue up at McDonald's. This kid, when he would have prayed that, did not know where his next meal was coming from. And so I would have expected for a kid going through that kind of system and about to go into the NFL, I would have thought, man, he's thinking, look at all the stuff I'm about to get. Look at this salary. Look at all the endorsement contract, all the stuff that runs through the mind of a young athlete. And listen to what he said. I said, DeMarcus, what do you really want? What do you really want for the future? What's your future with the NFL? What do you want to do? And he replied simply, I just want to be a good husband and a good father. Marcus doesn't know that, but he's my hero. Because I can assure you that most people grab for the shiny instead of the substance. And he chose to go deep. Lastly, and this isn't obligatory just because I'm preaching today, this is my life. My last hero has to be Jesus Christ. I got to tell you, you know, despite being, you know, someone will say, well, Jesus, you know, he was God and man. Yeah, yes, he was. But evidently, scriptures show up all the time that he still had free will. He still had the ability to make a decision. And I got to tell you, whether it was him in the garden saying, Father, if it's possible, would this cup pass from me? And instead he chooses to turn and face the cross. Or whether he's at the trial and he clearly could have chosen a different outcome. Because that's what the crowd would have wanted. I mean, for heaven's sake, can you imagine if he would have repudiated all that he had said before, and when they were crying, crucify him, crucify him, he would have joined in the mob and melted away and said, wait a second, I will follow what the crowd is giving shallow obeisance to Rome. And instead, remember that pivot point? He did the thing that required courage. You see, I've come to believe that the way we select our heroes goes to the core of Christianity. goes to the core of our faith. Because let me be clear, for us to even approach the cross, for us to even see Christ, for us to even understand who he is, for us to even begin a relationship with Christ, we've got to do the unpopular. The popular says, wait a second, I can never admit failure in me. I can never admit sin in me. I can't even have a thought or a feeling in which I might be offended. Well, let me tell you something, folks. The cross is an offense. Because it means that we have to come to a place in which we say, you know what? My life is broken and I broke it. I need fixing and I can't do it myself. In which we begin to say, Lord, I will, instead of doing the thing that the crowd does, I will pivot and I'll do the courageous thing. I'll follow Christ. Everyone knows the name Jesse Owens. If you don't know who that is, you need to. You need to. Jesse Owens, of course, most famously was a track and field specialist. He ran in the Olympics. He of course, ran in the 1936, I guess it was, Olympics. And it was a great time to watch that because, you know, here Hitler was leading the National Socialist Party to say that the Aryans, and again, it wasn't just a white race. It was, you know, it was blue eyes, blonde hair. I mean, it was just very, very specific that they're somehow genetically and morally superior. And so here comes the American track and field team represented by a young black Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens, while he's there, he's warming up, and he sees the guy who is his rival. He is the German favorite to win the Olympiad for the Germans, and it turns out that this is a nice guy. I mean, he's not full of the Nazis. Hate and all the stuff that they were spewing. He turns out he's a nice guy. In fact, what he sees is Jesse warming up, and he sees that he's either jumping too soon or too late, and he's missing his long jump. And he literally says he takes a rag, he takes a towel, and he lays it out in there, and he says, "This is where you jump from, right here." So sure enough, Jesse jumps from that distance, and he sets this amazing record. In fact, this German hero jumps afterwards, and he doesn't even get close. He's like 3 or 4 foot behind him. Sure enough, Jesse wins the gold. He ends up being snubbed by Hitler, no surprise. And the German individual wins the silver. But something happens. He looks over just before Jesse jumps. And he sees him praying before he jumps. Now, that's interesting. Because obviously it turns out the Nazis were not exactly committed Christians. You probably noticed that. He sees him pray. Doesn't say anything about it. But right afterwards, right after the jump, right after Jesse Owens has beaten the German hero, the German champion, they come over. They begin to be chummy with each other. They begin to be friends. And it starts a correspondence that lasts over the years. Over the years, finally, we're in the midst of the war, and the German hero writes Jesse. And again, they've exchanged many letters back and forth, right? Many letters back and forth. They've developed a good friendship. And he writes Jesse and he said, "This will be the last letter that you'll ever receive." And he does that because they're about to go into a large firefight and he knows the odds are long. And sure enough, he is killed in that firefight. It is his last letter. And he sends that letter to Jesse Owens. And here's what he says. He said, "We've known that the enmity between our peoples all these years was wrong. We've known Hitler was wrong. We've known all of this hate and stuff was wrong. And we've known all this nonsense about, you know, superiority of one ethnic group or the other is just nonsense. But," he said, "I know that you always wanted me to know one thing." He said, and he recognized some gifts that Jesse had sent him. And he said, "Thank you for that." He said, "But with my last letter, I want to give you a gift." In that letter, he said, "I want you to know that I saw you pray before you jumped. And after all these years, I found God." Real heroes are willing to stand when everyone else leaves, when everyone else does something else, and the pivot point of their life requires courage. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for your goodness and for your graciousness. Thank you for these, my brothers and my sisters. I enjoy so much when I get to worship with them. Father, let me just ask you publicly to forgive me when I've chased an image of what someone else had or what I thought was important and was not. Forgive me when I've chased a heroic idol that was simply an idol. Forgive me, Father, when I've not examined carefully what you call us to be. Forgive me, God, when my list of heroes has not been as true. Forgive me, Lord, when I've not used those hero principles to identify in my own life who I would emulate and who I would follow after. Father, forgive me when the top of my hero list was not always Jesus Christ. Father, it is my prayer that as we turn to a time of response, that it's with a brokenness of our heart we say, "I am tired of chasing the world's heroes. I'm ready to chase you." We love you, God. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.